Welcome back to Behind the Play. My name is Alex Adams, and I'm very thankful and lucky to be joined for the second time on this show by the one and only James Duthie of TSN. Thanks so much, James, for taking the time. It's been an interesting kind of way to do this podcast, but it should be fun. First of all, before I intro, kind of get started, what's it like to be a Hall of Famer?
It's funny. Bob Weeks, two of my good friends and colleagues, Bob Weeks and Dave Poulin, are each in about six Hall of Fames. Bob Weeks is in the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame, the Canadian Curling Hall of Fame, like the Etobicoke Hall of Fame, and Dave Poulin's in a whole bunch. And so they reminded me when I this is my first Hall of Fame, the Ottawa Sports Hall of Fame, that I still have a long way to go to catch them. But it was a really cool honor. They came right out of the blue. I always feel it's kind of weird when you're a sportscaster that you're going in with all these, great athletes. I'm basically a failed athlete, as most sportscasters are. But it was a very cool honor. Ottawa's always my home, so yeah, really, really neat moment. By the way, for your, if anyone's watching this, I'm in my daughter's bedroom. We're doing a house renovation, and this is like the only room in the house that's not completely gutted and dusty right now. And so I'm sitting on the floor. So yeah, if don't think I'm like a creeper or something like that. It's just very strange.
How much does this remind you of the panel?
Yeah.
were you first ballot Hall of Fame?
I don't think I was first ballot. I always feel like it's actually weird. It makes you feel old in a way, right? Because when you start getting into Hall of Fames, whatever it may be, it feels like sort of a lifetime recognition. And I still feel young, right? And so obviously I'm deeply honored, but in some ways I feel like, well, maybe this should have happened 10 years down the road or something like that when I'm closer to retirement or something. But no, it was very cool night. And just to tell a boring story, where are you from again? Are you from
Yeah, I'm
Ottawa?
from Ottawa.
Yeah, so I went in with Lyndon Hooper, a soccer player. And I told this story at the Hall of Fame. Like, Lyndon Hooper was one of the reasons I went into sports casting, because I thought I was a really good soccer player. I played for the Gloucester Hornets, and I thought I had a chance to make the provincial team, national team, et cetera. When you're 12 years old, you're a bit delusional. And Lyndon Hooper moved over from, I think, from Africa, Ghana or something, and played for the Nepean Hotspurs, which were our arch rivals. And as soon as I played against him, like, I'd never seen anything like it in my life. He was the best soccer player I'd ever seen. I was trying to guard him, and he just ran and ran. And like, I was puking on the sidelines after trying to cover him. And I think that was the moment I realized, like, I was not going to make it as a soccer player. Now, I had more delusions later on about football, but in essence, maybe at 12 or 13 years old, Lyndon Hooper was the first guy who made me think about, maybe I better find something else to do in sports. And I told him that story the night of the Hall of Fame, which was pretty cool. I don't think he remembered me at all from soccer, but I definitely remembered him.
I guess with that, and just talking about how the industry has evolved over the past 20, 30 years, how has that maybe changed your job as host and what you do? What have you seen maybe for your own role in terms of how like the media landscape's changed?
Yeah, I don't think as much for me. I think the role really changed for guys like the insiders, right? Because, Bob McKenzie used to break every trade there was, or Darren Dreger. And I think now, information comes, we on TradeCenter, say, we would break trades like on the air. And now it all happens on social media and happens, or teams break their own trades. I, as a host, we're still doing the same thing. Obviously there's little differences in there, the way we do things. Obviously so much more happens on digital. Maybe highlights are not as urgent as they used to be. I used to always love doing highlights during the game, breaking into the game for highlights, or doing highlights in the intermission, which we still do, but you have to realize that most viewers have their phones and have probably seen half the things they want to see anyway. So I think that's the immediacy of everything has changed it, but I don't think it's any different that we're still, trying to tell stories and sitting on a panel trying to be interesting. I think in many ways it's the same. We're headed towards streaming. Amazon's got involved in hockey this year. They'll probably get more involved when the next national deal comes around. So that's a major change. But to your question, it doesn't really change what I do or what the host does, right? We're still there to introduce the game and tell the best stories we can about the game.
With that, do you have a preference between the trade deadline show or free agent frenzy?
Well, I like Free Agent Frenzy because it's the last day of work for me, and I'm, about to start golfing for the summer. And also, stuff happens. Like the Free Agent Frenzy is built in, guaranteed. We go on usually at 11. That's another reason I like it. We go on at like 8 a.m. on trade deadline for some godforsaken reason. But we go on at 11, let's say, on Free Agent Frenzy, and at 12, all the signings come out. And nowadays, it's funny, they used to have to wait till 12 because that's the rule, but now everybody just breaks the news anyway. The league doesn't care. So we go on the air and there's action basically right away from 11 till 2 or 3 o'clock. Trade deadline's a little more fun because we don't take ourselves very seriously. We realized many years ago that it's a silly show. The whole notion of doing 10 hours on trades for seventh defensemen and fourth line centers is kind of crazy. So I think we have a lot more fun on that show, maybe. Free Agent Frenzy is more of a news show of who's going where and what does it mean. So I guess I'm fond of both of them, but Trade Center's a long day, man. So I guess I like the Frenzy better.
Is there one from like a free agent signing or a trade during either of those days that kind of sticks out to mind as being something that you really remember?
Yeah, I mean, there's all sorts. There was 1 year. I'm gonna forget the names of these guys, sadly. Damn. But 1 year there was just, the trade deadline used to be really busy all the time, but somewhere along the way they figured things out. And I always use the example when Ryan Smith was traded from Edmonton to the Islanders, and it's got to be what, 15 years ago now. I don't know what it is. Nobody wanted that trade to happen. Ryan Smith didn't want to leave. The Oilers didn't really want to trade him. But they waited and waited, and 3 o'clock came around, and they were a couple of $100,000 apart, and so they traded them. And they had the tearful news conference afterwards, and I really thought in some ways that that made a lot of GMs kind of wake up and players and go, we don't want to wait, we don't want to make this go till 3 o'clock. We're not going to make that mistake. So that, in my mind, I might be wrong, but my mind, that's when a lot of trades started happening earlier. And GMs wanted to get their heavy work done before Trade Center. So that's one I definitely remember. But the one I was getting to is, a few years later when things started to slow down, there was one day where we had just nothing going on. It was just nothing. And there was a trade between two minor leaguers. And I used to know their names, and I'm forgetting now. But we had them on. It was like Jeff Flick and somebody. And we had them both on phone calls, and I just thought it was great. Like we made a big deal out of it. We didn't know who Maxime Sauvé for, something like that. And it was just I just found it incredibly amusing. And the guys played along really well, those two players, because they would have never got mentioned ever on TSN before. But that day they got a lot of airtime because we had nothing else, and so. Those are kind of the moments that stick out. There's been big trades. I think free agency, the moments are kind of bigger when John Tavares signed with the Leafs and the Islanders, moments like that. And some of the early years of the free agent frenzy when we first started that show and the kind of crazy money that was getting thrown around. But I got to be honest, I've been doing them so long now that they all kind of blend into one, right? I've probably done 20 trade centers. And maybe like 15 free agent frenzies, so it's a bit of a blur.
Yeah, no, for sure. I guess maybe transitioning from the free agent frenzy and the trade deadline show just to the World Juniors, because it's back in Ottawa. And how cool is that for you, just to be coming back home to for the World Juniors? And it's not like last time there was a World Junior in Ottawa that it wasn't very memorable, of course, with the Jordan Eberle goal. So
Not memorable at all. It's awesome. That was always my favorite World Juniors. Now, I will say the one in Halifax a couple of years ago might have topped it in the sense that, we'd gone through a couple of COVID years and we just really needed a good World Junior that year. And it was awesome in Halifax with Connor Bedard, and the crowds were fantastic. And so, those two are sort of 1-2 in my history as far as my favorite World Juniors. And so I'm super pumped about going back to Ottawa. The only issue I have is every single person that knows me and every family member wants tickets, and I have no access. People think you magically have access to tickets, but I don't really. And so I got about 100 ticket requests that I'm trying to fulfill without having access to any tickets. So I may go broke, but it's cool. Like that's home to me. The crowds were fantastic in Ottawa in 2009. Like it was an unbelievable one. I think it'll be great again this year for sure.
I was at the Eberle game, so I still I actually have a funny story. I got the tickets for free because I was about 11 years old, and the guys beside me got their moms brought their moms to the second semifinal, so I just stayed and had
How
free.
good is that?
I know. I think I must have been the only person there that didn't buy a ticket, unless
I
it related to you.
told, yeah, I've told this story before, and so if any of your listeners have heard it or if I've told it to you, I apologize. But my parents came to that game and sat on the set with me. And so 2009, they were getting, my dad was probably 80, and my mom's 78, and my dad hates traffic. Like he just hates it. And so he'd always like to, leave early to beat the traffic. And it was, the Russians were up by one or whatever, and, 3 minutes left. And I said, Dad, you should get going. And he missed the Eberle goal and he never forgave me for that. He was in the parking lot somewhere when Eberle scored, but
Oh, dude. That's awesome. Yeah, no. Yeah, you can't do what all the Miami Heat fans did in that game six, and what was it, 2013? What was it when Ray Allen made that shot?
Right,
They all
all came
left,
back.
and then they're running back, and yeah, that
Yeah,
was.
and it's the same with the Buffalo Bills. If you've ever watched the 30 for 30 on the Buffalo Bills, the year that they came back against the Oilers in that wild card game when they were down, I don't know, they were down 35 nothing or 35-3 or something, and people were trying to drive back to the stadium. It's crazy scenes, crazy scenes.
Crazy. When like maybe going to the World Juniors itself, when does that process start for you? Like, is it now? Is it?
Yeah, but about now. I mean, I don't. It's not like I'm doing crazy research right now. I like to follow the guys who I've followed the tournament in the summer and talk to the Craig Buttons and the Bob McKenzies of the world about who they think are going to be on the team. Try to follow what they're doing in junior or college, and I'll really crack into it in December when camp opens. I don't like to waste too much time because, you only have so many hours in the day, and I don't want to do research on guys that get cut from the team. So, and we have a lot of great researchers too who'll provide me with a lot of stuff. But yeah, right around now, I'm starting to really pay attention to who might be there and what exactly they're doing.
I my maybe one question before I get to the NHL a little bit is, as a host for so long, do you ever feel like you want to put in your own opinion, or is that something that you kind of hold back on? Like, what's that maybe line for you of being the host but also providing your own opinion?
Yeah, that's a great question. For the most part, I think that I'm not there for that. That I am there to get as much opinion as possible out of the panelists. I'm not, they're the guys who played the game or coached the game or whatever it may be. I sit next to, Cheryl Pounder, who's got 10 gold medals, and O-Dog, who played so long in the league, and Dregs is the insider or whoever else is on the panel. So for the most part, no. When I'll make exceptions to that is to, if I feel a certain opinion is being underplayed, maybe, or to take devil's advocate on a situation, or to bring up an alternate stance if everybody's agreeing on something and I maybe don't agree. Once in a while, I think I will throw that in there, but I definitely try not to make a habit of it because I don't feel the role of a host. Maybe on certain shows are different, but on our show, I think my role is to get opinions out of people and to not present my own opinions. I'll do predictions on the preseason preview show and things like that. I'll weigh in once in a while on the quiz. The quiz is an example where if they all pick the same person, I might try to make a quick argument for another person. But yeah, for the most part, I don't do that.
Is that something where you always were kind of in that attitude or mind space, or was that something that evolved over time where you felt, okay, I'm more comfortable just kind of staying more neutral?
I think that, I took journalism and I was a reporter for a long time. And when you study journalism, they kind of bake that into you that you are supposed to be the neutral sort of observer of it. And obviously hosting hockey is different from being a news reporter, but that's just kind of the way I approach the job. That doesn't mean, I know there are other hosts that don't handle it that way, and that's fine. Like that, it's just, that's the way that I want to handle it. In my mind, yeah, maybe the work that I've done over the years has, I'm entitled to have an opinion. You're entitled to disagree with me. Maybe I have an informed opinion because I've talked to people about things, but for the most part, I don't think people are tuning in to watch my opinions. And that's just the way I look at things. I think I consider my job to get opinions out of others. And my job is more to add information where I can, to try to keep the show light and going, and but yeah, I don't, radio's different. You get interviewed on radio shows, and if I go on Overdrive or something, they'll ask me direct questions. I think I feel a little more liberal there, giving opinions for sure. But, and maybe in a show like Trade Deadline, where we have 10 hours to fill, and we can have a discussion that lasts for 20 minutes, maybe I might add a little more there. But when we're doing a 4-minute panel and intermission, nobody wants to hear what James has to say, I don't think.
How, like, maybe about that process and getting people to kind of lay it on a platter for them. What's that like, your preparation to allow your panelists to really give their best? What's that process like for you?
Yeah, I mean, I that's a hard thing to prepare for. I think it just happens over time that I hopefully have gotten better at it because I've been doing it a long time. But you're trying to keep conversations natural as possible. So my only job is to be prepared, to have knowledge on the subjects that we're discussing. If I'm completely, if I don't know what we're talking about, then that's an awkward spot. But if I know what we're talking about, I can add information, to balance out a conversation per se. But I don't know that it's preparation more than just, you're having a conversation and you're trying to stimulate conversation with people. And I just think that's obviously you depend on having good panelists to do it, which I've been lucky to have in all the sports that I cover. But yeah, I think it, if anything else, it's a weird job what I do, because, and I'm sure some of your listeners going, man, it's really not much work, is it? What he does, he just asks questions of people and listens to their opinions, which is kind of true. I think that, the work and the job comes in a pregame show and preparing, when people could call us traffic cops sometimes, and I think it's a fair thing. You're trying to get you your job is to get from here to there, to there, to there, to there, to there, to there, to commercial, out of commercial. And so I think where I earn my money, I suppose, or any host is to figure out ways to do that. Try to be clever here. Try to have some information that you can add in this 10 seconds here. Try to figure out a way to segue from this topic to that topic. And I think that's where the skill is more than anything else. So on a typical day, if I'm doing a Leafs game or a Sens game, and we have a pregame show, for instance, we don't do many Sens games, pregame shows, unfortunately, anymore. But, I'll spend there. We have producers who will, talk to all the panelists about what they want to talk about that day. And I'll spend about 2 hours alone in my dressing room, where I go through the whole show, and I'm very old school. I like to write things down. A lot of people use computers. I have bring out sheets of paper, and I kind of write. I don't write out the show. I don't write out what I'm going to say, but I write out, okay, here's what we're going to talk about here. Here's what we're going to talk about here, and maybe some point form notes about what I want to add. And people laugh because my handwriting's terrible. I can't even read it. But that's the way I like to do things and sort of get organized. Okay, if I'm going to commercial break right after we've talked about Timmy Stutzla, what can, and I'm gonna, what I'm gonna segue to our next segment is something else. How do I get from there to there? I spent a lot of time thinking about those silly things.
Oh, interesting. It's always interesting to see under the hood, as they say, and panelists, kind of the perspective of the host
I would
on.
say, but if you ask most hosts, like we do more of our work on like the pregame shows than anything else, where you're going for 30 minutes straight. When you do an intermission, you have a 5 or 6 minute panel, maybe another a second block, and there's not nearly as much, and you're reacting to the game, so you don't really prepare for that, right? So most of the work goes into pregame shows.
I guess transitioning as best as I can to the NHL. You're obviously in Toronto. It's been the same old story in Toronto for a long time. I guess, James, from your perspective, how is this team different from years prior or even similar in your mind?
Well, it's so early. When do you put this podcast up, by the way? Right away afterwards?
No, a bit later, like in a day or two.
Day or two? Okay. So I will be honest with you. The Leafs are playing right now as we're recording this, and I have it in my bottom screen because I didn't want to stand you up for the eighth straight time because I've been so busy. But
No.
and they're winning as I'm speaking to you tonight. I look, it's super early. I think they do look different though. There's something different about like the changes on D. And again, I have a certain rule that I try not to read too much into the first three, five. Maybe once you get to 10 games, you can start to look at a team, but they do look different. They do look whatever more defensively responsible. They're simplifying things, dumping pucks in and that, which sounds boring, but so far anyway, it is different. And maybe it's just, I think Sheldon Keefe was a good coach, but after so many years, you just need a different voice. And maybe Craig Berube is just that different voice. And suddenly the ears perk up of these stars. Again, nothing matters until playoff time. But I would say that this is the most different they've looked through, a few games than in this, the whole Matthews, sort of Marner era. This looks different again. Three, four games in, who knows? But they just look tighter defensively and just playing smarter hockey right now.
The core four has been a big part of the discussion for a long time in Toronto. How much do you maybe put the onus of maybe their failures or their successes on just four players?
I mean, that's life. I think that it's not all their fault when they lose, but when you're making double-digit $1 million a year, that's life. And I think they probably realize that. If you're going to put half of your salary cap or 40% of it to, four guys, those are the guys that have to do it, right? I mean, the Oilers are a really good hockey team, or were last year, but they needed McDavid and Draisaitl to be amazing, and Hyman to get them to Game 7 of the Stanley Cup final. It's just, you can't succeed otherwise. So I think whatever blame they've gotten is probably fair. It's just the reality of what it is. You have to produce in the playoffs if you're making $11 million a year. I think Mitch Marner and Austin Matthews and William Nylander and so on probably figure that out. I'm sure they spend nights where they're lying in bed going, well, yeah, if we had better goaltending and a little better D, maybe we could have won. And but there's superstars that have won Stanley Cups, not because of their performances, but because their team's performances. Certainly that's happened before. And then the superstars end up getting, the credit the rest of their lives. But like I said, when you make that kind of money, I think you have to take that on your shoulders. And I do think they bear a lot of responsibility for the failures.
I'm going from one group of a team with a group with making a lot of money to the Edmonton Oilers, who have Leon Draisaitl making now the most money in the NHL, and obviously McDavid is right up there as well. We can't read too much into the early season start, and they've really struggled. But in your opinion, just is this team ready to go back to the playoffs and specifically go back to the Stanley Cup, or how hard is that?
I mean, I picked them to win. I mean, so many people picked them to win the cup this year, and we all have recency bias. It's really hard to do predictions at the beginning of a season because all you have to go on okay, besides the changes that have been made, like the preseason doesn't mean anything. You can't gauge anything from the preseason. So unless a team has made wholesale changes and made significant additions or had significant subtractions, all you go on is what you saw at the end of last year. And what you saw from the Oilers was, after being down 3-0 in that final, winning those three games, and you thought, oh man, they're so close. And with these guys, they can't be denied. And then they get out and start the season the same way they started last season, and you start to have doubts. But I think they'll be fine. I think that the game that happened, by the time people are watching this, the other night against Philadelphia, when they were down 2-0 and at risk of going 0-4, and then they ran into the Flyers, ran into Skinner, and the Oilers fought back, and then Draisaitl wins it in overtime. I think that's kind of an early season turning point. Maybe I'm wrong. I think that there's just too much talent on that team for them not to go deep, but they do have definite big issues on D right now. I suspect the D will look significantly different by the end of the season. So can they go back? It's tough, but I mean, like I couldn't think of a team that I thought had a better chance to get out of the West than the Oilers. I mean, there's a lot of really good ideas like Dallas and Colorado and Vegas and Vancouver and so on, but I couldn't think of a better option than Edmonton.
Just maybe talking about McDavid himself, and you've been watching a lot of great hockey players for a long time. Where does he stack in your mind as one of the greatest of all time? Like in that pantheon, like where does he sit?
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting when his career is done. He's got to win some cups, obviously, because you just don't get on that list. I think he could win 9 Hart trophies and set, incredible. I don't think he'll break Gretzky's record. That's impossible. But set all sorts of records. And if he doesn't have a cup, you'll be left with that. That's just the way it is in sports. It's the kind of Dan Marino effect, right? Dan Marino is an amazing quarterback, but never won a Super Bowl. Not his fault. So I think he's amazing. I'll tell you a quick story. I live north of Toronto in a town called Aurora, and it's where McDavid lives, like 5 minutes from me, and it's right next to another town called Newmarket, where he's from. And my daughter's boyfriend's a hockey player, a decent hockey player, and he plays in this beer league. And so they make the quarterfinals this year of this beer league, and my daughter's at the game, and she texts me, and she goes, "Dad, they're playing McDavid and Draisaitl." So this team and one of the team in the beer league is a bunch of McDavid's friends. And I guess he shows up, one game a year kind of thing. And he'd just been married on the Saturday, and this was a Wednesday night, and him and Draisaitl showed up for the quarterfinals, and they were wearing like their Oilers socks, their Oilers pants, their Oilers helmets. And so my daughter's boyfriend got to take like 6 faceoffs against Draisaitl. And so a thrill of a lifetime for all these kids playing in a beer league, right? It's obviously a real quality beer league. There's a lot of prospects and junior players and such in it. So it's not like stiff beer league, but to be playing against McDavid and Draisaitl in beer league, and they actually won 12-11 in overtime. McDavid and Draisaitl had a 2-on-1 and lost the puck, and some kid went
Oh
back the other way and scored. So
my God.
yeah, I think they scored about 5 goals each, but when they weren't on the ice, the rest of the guys were just normal beer leaguers, right? So anyway, I think it's I tell that story only because I th also think it's really cool for McDavid and Draisaitl to do that. I'm sure they just want to get out and have a skate, but
Wow.
to go out and play these, these guys have a story they're going to have for the rest of their lives, right?
Yeah, no, what was it Bobby Lou went into
Yeah, Bobby Lou did that this year, right? But and play goal for a team, but it's yeah. So anyway, neat story. The
Cool.
goalie was terrified. The goalie's like, "Oh my God." He said, "Dry on the first shift, Draisaitl like rifled one off the crossbar, the hardest shot the goalie'd ever." He's like, "Oh, well, I'm going to get destroyed." And then McDavid scored on a breakaway like 10 seconds later. And,
Wow. I just imagine a beer league defenseman having Connor McDavid getting just like how perilous that would feel.
Oh, it's
Oh,
just
God.
insane. And I'm sure they were just, I'm sure they weren't playing.
No.
The guys said they got fired once the game was close late in the game. They started to roll, but I'm sure they weren't giving it their, NHL 100%, but still pretty darn cool.
Pretty cool. Pretty cool. The last one before I let you go, just because on the theme of Ottawa, your hometown team, there's been a lot of drama with the team over the years, and now and a lot of drama in net as well. And Allmark's back, although with this team they extended him. Now he might be hurt a little bit, but just in general, how much do you think the core of the maybe the issues in Ottawa have been on the goaltending compared to maybe the rest of the team?
First of all, the goaltending's obviously been a major issue, and I think you never really know, how much it affects until you get good goaltending, and we see. And let's say Allmark is what he's supposed to be this year, then we can really make some conclusions about the rest of this team, because I almost think it's not fair in a way. If you're worried about your goalie all the time, then you're not playing confidently in front of him. And I think it just affects the way the entire team plays. And I think that's happened in Ottawa for the last, 5 years now. So I'll be really interested to see, having a guy who can steal games and you feel really solid behind if he stays healthy, how that changes them. I think it's a major concern, how that core of young forwards plays defensively. And I'm not saying anything that nobody said in Ottawa, but I still think that's a place I really want to see if, can you improve that? Can guys like Timmy Stützle and Tkachuk and Batherson, et cetera, Norris, can they like learn to play, better team defense? Because I think that's been a major problem, and they haven't changed that. Those guys are still those guys, right? And until they learn to do that better, I don't know if you can take the next massive step. Maybe if you get great goaltending, you can, and it'll prove me wrong. But I would say that was, besides goaltending, the biggest flaw of that team the last few years has been just overall team defense, and that extends to the stars up front. So I think, maybe Allmark playing great will lessen the attention on that. But I think that would be the number one thing I'm watching this year besides goaltending.
I think you're completely right as someone in the market here in Ottawa.
Yeah.
James, before I let you go, does this setup gonna is this gonna be the new setup for the panel moving
Yeah.
forward?
Yeah. Let's do it. Everything will be done in my daughter's bedroom. Yeah. It's I'm not used to sitting on the ground too. I feel like I'm in a yoga class. So I'm sorry. I've been moving
Oh,
around
did a
constantly.
great job.
My ass is sore from sitting here. But
Oh.
no. Yeah. This will never be the panel look. A good wallpaper though in the background. That's my wife's choice, okay, not mine. No, but I appreciate you having me on, buddy. It's always a pleasure talking to you, and certainly always a pleasure. I'm going back to Ottawa actually this weekend to MC. There's a roast for Brian Kilray, who's
Cool.
obviously near and dear to my heart. My first book I wrote on Killer, and he's one of the first guys I ever met in the business, and he's just an absolute legend. So only getting back for about 24 hours, but I
Awesome.
love coming back, and I can't wait to be there for World Juniors over Christmas.
Well, I can't wait for you to be back for Killer, but also for the World Juniors. And thanks so much for taking the time while watching a Leafs game and on the floor in your daughter's bedroom. So I appreciate it a lot, James, for taking the time and doing this. And
Thanks,
we'll
Alex.
be in touch. Take care.
Appreciate it, buddy.